edition of College Crosscast. I'm Ryan McDonald. Saif and Chris will be joining on shortly. On this very special edition, we have a very special guest in Utah lacrosse head coach Brian Holman. Last week, the University of Utah announced that they would be heading to the varsity level in men's lacrosse in 2019, becoming the westernmost NCAA Division I men's lacrosse program, and a team that could definitely set the growth of the game into a spiral in a good way. And at the forefront is Coach Holman, a very familiar face in the lacrosse world, starting off at Johns Hopkins as a player and for the past couple of years at UNC, including when they won the national title last year as an assistant, as well as his two sons who have played for the Tar Heels. He then moved on to Utah to take over their club team last year with the intentions of going D1. And last week, they made the move, along with the blessings of the Pac-12. The University of Utah will start play in 2019 at the D1 varsity level with one more year in club, supplanting both Air Force and Denver as the westernmost team in the nation now, right in the Rocky Mountains in Salt Lake City. In this very special edition, Coach Holman talks to Chris Saif and I about everything that goes into building a program and the excitement that comes with being a team that's looking to break new ground in the Division I level and could be the powder keg that sparks expansion in men's lacrosse to the West Coast. Here's our interview with Coach Holman as he joined us here on College Crosscast. And thank you for joining us so much, Coach Holman, on our show. We're so happy to have you on board.
Happy to be here, man. It's awesome.
Congratulations again, Coach. Thanks again for coming on. This is really an honor for us.
Absolutely. Huge accomplishment for you guys over at Utah after that whole little rough roller coaster of 11 months from the first reported rumor to you're hiring, and then even with the assistants and then the MCLA play, and then all culminated Thursday, Friday with the official announcement. So we're happy with everyone in the lacrosse community.
Yeah, same here, guys. I mean, it's, you know, the objective was had a lot of points to it, but I think overall, you know, for Adam and Will and Marcus and myself and our families, it was, you know, something greater than just having another Division I lacrosse team. And I don't mean it, you know, sound pious about that. That's not the point. But I think ultimately this is going to help us all at some level. And really that's what we're all shooting for, right?
Indeed. So I don't know who wants to start with the first question. I'll probably start with the first question. So let's go back all the way back 11 months ago when, you know, it was still not even considered, like Utah wasn't even thinking about, no one really thought about Utah as Division I. And then all of a sudden we have this first report from LAC Sports Network that you guys would go Division I in either 2019 or 2020. And then Utah shot it down, and then we heard about, hey, they're really aiming for a Division I program with, you know, with you at the helm and your son Marcus, and then later on Will and Adam Gettleman along as assistants. When you first heard or were first offered to help start a big lacrosse program at Utah, were you bullish on that?
No. I'm honestly, the first phone call was I say this, you know, I sort of laughed at the idea, you know, realistically, and you know, for lots of reasons. I didn't think it was feasible. I didn't think it was possible, and I really didn't have a comfortability with living in the state of Utah. So all those things led me to believe that this couldn't happen. But, you know, and the other piece of that too is that I don't want to be remiss about this, is that I was really happy at North Carolina, and I had a great setup there with Coach. We had just won a national championship. You know, a lot of people had a lot of opinions on that we should have been winning them prior to that. But the bottom line is we did win one. And so it wasn't like I was dying to leave a great situation. And what unfolded was, you know, through strong encouragement from my wife, who's over here making dinner right now, by the way, to you know, really explore this option. And the more I got into it with David Neeleman, and you guys have obviously heard David's name being thrown around, and he doesn't like for me, you know, for us to use it because he really wants to stay in the background. But it's not fair to talk about this process without talking about David. And we met for 3 days out here when I took this visit. And honestly, guys, that after being with him and just seeing his passion and his energy and his challenge for me and me sharing a lot of ideas that have accumulated over the years, you know, one thing led to another. And then we met with the athletic department and really laid out a full-fledged game plan on how we believed that we could make this work and invited them to allow us to take on this opportunity. And that's really how the whole thing started. And from that time until this time, a myriad of things had to take place for us to prove our worth. And I think over time we did that. And what really makes me proud at the end was that the school, you know, was looking for a way not to do this. And my staff, and I don't like even like to call them that way, you know, Marcus and Adam and Will, with their passion and their energy and their effort and their community. And then the community rallied around. And you know, we've had over 1,500 kids or people to our club games. And it became a sort of a groundswell. And the school looked at it and said, geez, you know, we should get on board with this thing. You know, what are we missing here? And so it's just a lot of work went into it, a lot of fun, man, coaching that club team and being on the sidelines with those three characters. I mean, we you know, and I, just so many people deserve so much credit for making this work that I could spend all day talking about it with you guys. And I hope the community, the lacrosse community, understands how passionate we are and how passionate the school is now about the game of lacrosse. And we get an opportunity to explore that at a higher level. And that's what we're, you know, really excited about. So I hope that answered your question. I'm not sure.
Definitely did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you spoke a little bit about, you know, leaving behind UNC. How hard was it to leave behind the situation at Chapel Hill? But at the same time, you know, how exciting was it to, you know, be a part of starting something new and, you know, starting a new life, essentially, in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was hard, and then it wasn't hard. You know, I think I mentioned it somewhere else today that my time, my family's time, and my time in North Carolina are so precious to us. You know, I'm so proud of our family and what my two sons. I was blessed to be able to coach both of my sons. Not many people can say that, and blessed to be able to watch my daughter play. Have three kids graduate from the University of North Carolina, all playing lacrosse there. And again, ingratiating ourselves into that community, you know, having such an unbelievable relationship with Joe Bresci, you know, and Chris Fifes and Joe Martin, and then Metzi for the last couple of years, who's been a dear friend of mine for a long time. You know, not easy, right? Not easy because the hard, really hard move was jumping off the cliff from Baltimore to go down with Bresci. As a volunteer assistant and really, you know, have no income and really say, if I'm going to get into this coaching thing, I'm going to start here and it's going to be at the rock bottom. And that's what we did. That's what I did. And, you know, bless my wife for allowing me to go ahead and do that. Not many people have that option. So it was hard. And then the other piece too, I'd like to share with you, and I'm accused of talking too much, but it's just the way it is, man. This is all good stuff, and you know, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to take the Tar Heels from where they were when we got there to the pinnacle when I left. And you know, you just don't go through processes like that and discard them. Not for me, anyhow, because it takes so much of your heart and your soul to that you put into this, and Joe, and so yeah, that was hard, but you know, life gives you opportunities, and some people you take advantage of them and you don't. And I thought our family thought that this was the next great opportunity, and I can tell you right now it certainly is feeling that way for all of us. This community here is off the charts. Some of the nicest and most generous and grateful people I've ever met. The school community has a lot of resemblance to North Carolina. It's a sense of the family, and it's a sense of community at the University of Utah, and our family loves that. And just giving me, you know, us this opportunity is really we're just so grateful and so humbled by it. So yeah, we've sort of shifted gears. I will never, ever forget University of North Carolina, and we will always be Tar Heels. Obviously, I got three of them, you know, sons and a daughter. But now we're Utes, and now the page is turned, and yeah, I got the red shirt on, and let's go, right? Now, what are we going to do out here? So, you know.
Coach, I just wanted to take you a little bit back. Also, feel free to talk as long as you want. As people who put out long podcasts, we have no problem. As long as you can talk, we're here to listen. For those who not as familiar with your background, your Hopkins grad, I love hearing that as a fellow Hopkins guy. And I didn't know if you could elaborate on some of your experiences, like you know, as a D coordinator at Hopkins, and then at Boys Latin, and then also at Breakers Club lacrosse team before you got to UNC. How did all those help you in your progression as coaching? And if you could maybe let us on about why you actually went into coaching, like if something had you know, inspired you after you had graduated from Hop.
That's a great question, Safe. I didn't know you were a Blue Jay.
Oh, indeed. I Chris and Ryan don't like the propaganda I put out.
We're Syracuse grads, by the way.
I know that. You guys, I know that. I know the propaganda that gets put out up there. I love it. That's good. And by the way, I'm huge fans of you guys. The whole college cross thing, and I've followed you guys forever. I like the way you guys, you're a little bit off, and you don't take yourself too seriously, but you make some awesome, awesome observations about the sport of lacrosse and some of the really intrinsic pieces of it. So I just want to let you guys know I'm a fan. So anyhow, I was blessed to be able to play at Johns Hopkins University back in probably the tail end of its glory days. If you can put a time frame on that, I mean, I played in four national championships in a row. Only won one as a freshman. I didn't play in that. I started in the next three and lost three of those championships by four goals total. You know, and I think at that time, I think Hopkins played in eight straight national championship games. And for you Syracuse alums, 1983, when we lost to Syracuse in a heartbreaking event, I was the goal, by the way, thank you. And you guys should be thanking me, I think. I mean,
always thank you, Coach.
5 years, that started Syracuse's runs of Final Fours in 1983. So I was blessed to be able to be in that environment. Never in my wildest dreams growing up where and how I did that I think I could play at such an incredible school and graduate and then play for such incredible people. And, you know, talk about Henry Ciccarone, one of the greatest coaches of all time. And God bless Chick. He died when he was 50 years old, a massive heart attack the year after he retired. He retired after in 1983 after that devastating loss to Syracuse. I don't know if that put him under, but, you know. Oh, that, you know, I'm sure that's something to do with it. But, you know, he at the time, when I played for him, we didn't get along very well. Chick was very, very tough on his players and very tough on goalies. I mean, you know, if he didn't feel good about what you were doing, you were out. You got yanked. And, you know, that's not the easiest thing in the world as a goalie. But what I look back at now, being a coach, I sent an email out to Matthew and Adam. I mean, sorry, Marcus and Adam and Will. There was an article about Chick Inside Lacrosse way back, right before we started this, and I wanted them to know more about that man and what he taught me from a preparation standpoint and a discipline standpoint and an organization. He was the most competitive person I've ever seen in my life, bar none. And he, you know, we played that way. It was just so that was awesome. And then the coach that doesn't get mentioned a lot by you know that should is Fred Smith. You know, Fred Smith honestly held the Johns Hopkins lacrosse program together. He coached there for, I think, 38 years. And Freddie was one of the most dear, kindest human beings on the face of the earth. Reminds me a lot of Coach Simmons. Freddie had an incredible way of getting you to feel so good about yourself and believe in yourself and trust in yourself. And he was the grandfather of that staff. And I got into coaching, honestly, guys, to honestly, in part of honoring Freddie. I wanted to be like him, you know. So my roles as I kind of grew up in the lacrosse community was more of that, with Bobby Shriver at BL, was sort of a guy that, you know, sort of worked behind the scenes and kept the players, you know, happy and moving forward and had an ear, but also get into them a little bit if they needed it. And when I worked with Zim at Hopkins in from 85 to 90, again, similar role. I was a younger guy then. So just picking up and learning as you move along. I got out of the coaching profession and got into the business world, started making money, and was started to raise a family. But you know, and that led me in a different path because I never had any money in my life. And so starting to make some money was like a pretty cool thing. And then starting to raise a family is like, wow, I can really take care of these people that I love. But I always coached. So I said, well, if I can't coach college, let me go coach a youth team, right? And then 5 and 6 year olds and 7, 8 year olds and 9 and 10 year olds and then a club team and then back to high school. So over 31 years, I've never spent a spring that I did not coach lacrosse at some level. And I make that point because I think it's very important in our game today. Just because you're experienced doesn't mean you're any good, right? People can spend a whole lifetime doing a lot of things and just saying, hey, I've been on the radio for 20 years. It doesn't mean you did a good job. It just means you lasted for 20 years, right? And I'm saying I coached for 31 years. It doesn't mean I'm a great coach. But I think what that brings is just experience of all levels. You know, I don't think you really know how to coach until you go out and have to get a bunch of 5 and 6 year olds to try to do something. You know, and then be happy about trying to do it, right? So I think all those things have added up, and ultimately, you know, raising a family, and I think that experience pays huge dividends in the coaching world because that's all we're doing is an extension of when we're coaching is raising another 40 kids or 45 kids or trying to help them in that time frame. So, Safe, to answer your question, all those things were extremely vital, and then I go back to the last piece. Really jumping off the cliff, and what happened is I had a lot of business setbacks, and the business world was just really, you know, and my wife said to me, and I'll never forget it, she said, you're never happier than when you're on a lacrosse field, and it just resonated with me, doing a lot of praying about what I should be doing at that point in my life, and it was lacrosse, and that's when Coach Bresch and I met over in UMBC at Jake Reed, what used to be Jake Reed's camp. Now it's Nike's blue chip or whatever, but yeah. For 3.5 hours and talked about lacrosse and life and kids. And we just had a connection that was beyond belief. And I think a lot of it was fate and faith. And that's what led me to Carolina and all of us to Carolina. So I don't know, again, long-winded answer. It's too hard to put all these things in short sound bites. I don't talk that way anyhow, so you guys might get used to that. Maybe you won't. I don't know. You might never get the audience. But, you know, it just adds fuel to the fire, man. Just adds fuel to the fire. And I think what I can bring to coaching in Utah is just an experience level and a love for kids and a love to educate and teach. So that leads us right to where we are right now.
Indeed. Coach, I just want to give one question for Marissa, just because we were on top of Utah. Chris, you can go right after. Not to interrupt you, but shout out to Marissa. Sorry you couldn't get you on. What kind of challenge is recruiting in a state that has just acknowledged varsity lacrosse as a sanctioned sport at the high school level? Have you found or looking forward to overcoming some of the challenges of being a bit off the beating path for other D1 teams being so far away?
Yeah, again, great questions. You know, Utah's growing. You know, we helped with the, we didn't push it over. I think we pushed it over the edge, but we didn't do the legwork for getting the high school sanctioned. You know, I met with a bunch of people, a lot of community leaders when we first came out here, and they asked me what would benefit the state and what would benefit the university if we could all, and my thing was all of us trying to work together. I think one of my pet peeves is in lacrosse is that we have this beautiful game. We have so many passionate people, but we have a lot of different pieces going on. You know, the whole MLL and NLL, and they can't get their schedule straight to let guys come and play the game. I mean, that's just crazy to me. Like, why can't we get along, right? Like, why can't we have – so my thing with Utah was, you know, let's try to be unified if we're going to grow this thing. So we got the high school sanctioned. The community did that. We helped push it over the edge. We have a youth program that has almost 9,700 kids involved, girls and boys, throughout the whole state. We have formed one youth group, Intermountain Youth Lacrosse Association, that will disseminate information, hopefully from Utah down. Marcus and Adam and Will are writing curriculums. We're going to do videos, and we're going to try to teach the kids a base curriculum all the way through the ranks, you know, how to catch and throw, scoop, how to do things the right way. So I think we're going to build some intrinsic value with the state. Right now, there's probably 3 to 5 kids coming out of Utah that can play at a Division I level. My goal is to keep them all here at home, for sure. Absolutely, 100%. And I think we'll be able to do that. I really do. And then, Safe, to answer your question, yeah, it is a challenge. It's going to be a challenge. It already is. I've been on the phone literally for 2 days talking to coaches around the country about scheduling and conferences. And I'm sure that's probably going to be a question that you guys have to bring up. And it's going to be a major hurdle for us to overcome. But my feeling is, hey, you know, we're going to overcome it. One way or another, we're going to overcome it. And if the community is as close as we all believe it is, then some guys are going to have to hopefully make some exceptions to the rule and not worried about playing Utah because the RPI isn't strong enough. And, you know, the those things we got to maybe overcome, or I got to try to help convince people to overcome them. So the daunting task, I think, is going to be that next step. I don't think it's going to be recruiting for us. I don't. I think we're going to have given a fair shot at the kids that we want to recruit, as fair as anybody else. I think it's just going to be, how do we align ourselves? What conference are we in, and how are we going to schedule games?
Mm-hmm. And to jump a little bit off that, you know, Bubba Fairman, one of the top rated lacrosse players in the class of 2017, he's originally from Utah, so, I mean, the West brings out a lot of good players no matter where they are, and that's Utah included. My question is, Coach, you brought up the point of family, and you've been a part of the Hopkins family, two separate ones, as a player and a coach. Then you went to the Boys Latin with legend and Bob Shriver as their head coach, and then you went to, you know, Joe Bresci in North Carolina, and he knows a lot about family, as we've heard from a lot. And then you decided to have your faith family, your own family, and then even Utah. So how much of the family has been a huge part of not only your life, but also in lacrosse in general, in your mind?
I mean, I think that's what it's all about, right? I mean, we all have fallen in love with this game because of the spiritual component that runs so deep. You know, I was doing a camp the other day with one of our camps, and just mostly 7 and 8 year olds. And I just grabbed a kid's stick, and, you know, one of my pet peeves in lacrosse is the kid's sticks are a mess, right? It's your goal. It's your ticket, right? And these kids' sticks are strung wrong, and they're warped and all that. Yeah. That stick up, and as soon as you pick that stick up, there's something that happens, right? And it just runs right through you. And, you know, so family is everything. My personal family is everything I have in my life, and it's been my guiding light. It is the most proud thing I've ever done, is being married to my wife for 30 years and raising a beautiful family. That's it, bar none. If I die tomorrow, I'm a happy man. All right, but the lacrosse family is one of the most powerful communities in the world, I think. So to bring that to Utah and start to develop this state and understanding that how powerful that family feel and that spiritual feel is for the game is really special. And I think if you talk to Adam or Marcus or Will, I think besides having a little bit of faith in me, I think that was probably their biggest challenge to come out here is to be able to spread that good news westward. And there's so many people before us. Trust me, we're not up here for sure. We're down here with everybody. We just have a little bit more light on us right now because of the situation. But there's been so many more people spreading westward in the lacrosse world. What I'm hoping to do, and what I think we've been able to do, is excite them. Really, to say, man, look, hang in there. You know, your reinforcements are coming this way. And that's been a big battle cry out here. The response that I've gotten from the West Coast is, you know, thank you. So it's all of us. So you know, Chris, I hope that answers your question. I'm not sure. Again, I might have gotten off track, but
it's everything. We love our digressions on this show, so no, don't worry.
Excuse me while I digress. Yeah,
but I guess building off of on that, now Utah's being seen as kind of the powder keg to set up the westward expansion. So I guess a two-pronged question here is, one, do you feel a little bit of a burden of the responsibility of being that team to, you know, be that one to take another step westward and the first Pac-12 school to do it, you know, first P5, obviously Air Force and Denver have done it, but this is the first, you know, team in the P5 doing it in the West Coast. And then secondly, you know, right now you're focusing on building your own team and everything, but are you also embracing of what's to come? You know, if a couple other Pac-12 schools in the next decade decide to say, hey, we want to join in on lacrosse and everything, are you kind of like embracing that role too, where, you know, you're setting up yourself right now to build up some really big rivalries in the future?
Yeah, all the above. I don't feel any pressure or I just feel grateful. I mean, we're grateful. This is a great opportunity, and you know, pressure is when you got a big family and you just walk in and you're in the. Your boss fires you and you don't have any savings and you got a lot of worry about. I don't live that way. I don't really worry about it. I don't want my teams to play that way. So I can't be hypocritical and let everything bother me. So no. I feel an obligation now. I even more sense of urgency to keep moving forward now that we've crossed this major hurdle. So I think that was the first part of your question. Mm-hmm. The last part of the question, and I think I missed the middle, but I'll go back to that. Mm-hmm. I want the Pac-12 in, and we want to create this cool conference. I mean, look at the ACC and I want to see that, like, that, you know, with Cal and Oregon and Stanford and Colorado. I mean, geez, I was up there for the RMLC playoffs that we were fortunate enough to make this year, and I've never been to Boulder, and oh my gosh, what a place. It would fit perfectly into the lacrosse world. And, you know, we had thousands of people coming out to watch the Silly Club game, right? And I shouldn't say silly because it's not. But, you know, so you know, I don't feel an obligation. I just feel grateful, and I feel that whatever way we can help expand this game, we're going to do it. And then your middle part is, yeah, we have a job to do here. We can't lose sight of that. I mean, we are hired and you know, to build a Division I lacrosse program at the University of Utah. And that's number one. I think our staff completely understands that. I know I do. You know, when you can do all these things and not lose focus on the priority. We're a club team now. I said it the other day. That's who we are. And we will be a club team until we become a Division I team. But I know what our goal is. And our goal is to compete at the highest levels of Division I lacrosse. That's our goal. You know, how long? Don't know. Will we get there? Yep. All right. And we have the staff and the university and the backing to do it. So, you know, I think we have our priorities in order. And in the meantime, and you can always stretch out and you can always reach out and try to help. I think it's an obligation that we have to this game, right? That's again, why we're doing it. So I think we'll be able to accomplish a lot.
Coach, I was wondering if you could expound on the interview process and the kind of the support you've gotten from the administration. You know, everyone knows that Utah is the first P5 school to add lacrosse since Michigan, but you guys have had a different route than Michigan, and I know our readers would love to hear about, you know, just the support that you have from the administration and how you worked to get this together from, you know, internet reports 11 months ago to, you know, the actual press conference when you announced it.
Yeah, so I mean they were always supportive. They were skeptical, and they had a right to be. I mean, you know here we are, we laid this plan out, we say here's what we're going to do, and we did it, and we had to work sort of around the university because we were a club team and we were treated. Last year, there were no benefits from the university towards this club. The university made it very clear, until we do this, you're on your own. And And I tell you what, I'm very grateful for that. I'm very thankful for that. It taught us a lot, and it taught me a lot of things that I'm going to carry forward into our lacrosse team. So we had to prove our worth. And again, you know, looking back at it, I wouldn't change one dang thing. You know, I would not change one thing. It's going to make us stronger. We've already been able to develop and build our culture that we want. We've laid the first layer of bricks into the culture because we had to prove it. You know, we didn't have a locker room. Players didn't have equipment. You know, we didn't have three helmets and four pair of gloves and Under Armour crap all over the place. We didn't have places to practice at times, and you had to make do with what you had. And it sort of reminded me of the old days a little bit. But dang if our team wasn't tougher for it. And we built a sense of grit that you don't build any other way. So that part of it, I think, was a huge advantage for us. And then as we move forward and every step we took that we passed the test, you know, the university would take a step forward with us. And it wasn't like, hey, you guys go there and we're going to hang out back here. They kept right up step with us. And there's some members in that athletic department that we wouldn't happen without them. And they are fully invested. I had them watching all the playoff games on ESPN, the guys that really have never even watched lacrosse before, and they're texting me saying, holy cow, did you see the kid Rambo play or Maryland play? And I'm like, yeah. So they're all fired up watching it. And so then we came down to the finish line, and what had happened was they formed a committee that had to report back to the president, and it was called a sports committee, and to see the viability of adding men's lacrosse. And the reality is that committee was looking to find a way to turn this down. And that's the reality. And they were going to go to vote in March. And if they would have voted in March, we would not be talking here today. All right. I might be happy asking you guys for a job to be on your show. All right. All right. So
you can certainly do better than us, Coach. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's that Hopkins degree, man. It's
worth. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You'll be fine.
So we kind of got wind of that, and through help throughout the athletic department, we got them to extend the process until May, and that allowed us to bring in Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12. That allowed me a couple more visits with the committee. And after those things started to really resonate, what the committee came back with is, holy cow, we have to do this. We would be fools not to do this. And one of the objectives that the athletic department likes is that you guys know this. I mean, Utah's a newbie to the Pac-12. They're not Colorado and UCLA and USC. So what they viewed it as, let's be the first one in, right? Let's be the innovator in this sport that everybody's clamoring for right now, and let's do it. And they started gravitating towards that. So, long story short, a year's worth of and I hate that saying. I'm going to get rid of that at some point. Everybody again came forward and made this work. The school did. We held up our part, the fans did, the community did, the founders did, the money, you know, all of it came in, and I think it was through great leadership, not on my part, but on a lot of people's part. I just kept trying to keep everybody focused and pushing towards the ultimate goal, and we did it. And, you know, and again, now what's next, right? We got a lot of work to do, but this was a whole lot of fun, and it was an unbelievable learning experience. I think if you would talk to Adam or Mark or Will, I think the stuff they learned this year is going to be priceless for them going forward as young coaches and young men in this profession. So I'm grateful for that as well. So,
Coach, I know you're still a year away from becoming an official Division I program, but have you already spoken to head coaches of newer Division I programs? Like one of our friends is Dylan Sheridan, the Cleveland State head coach, who was at Denver, so he knows a little bit about the West, and guys like him, maybe Joe Amplo, Ed Stevenson at UMass Lowell, even Lloyd Carter at Hampton. Have you talked to those guys about how it is to start their own Division I program yet?
Yeah, Chris, 100%. You know, Dylan and I kind of go back a little bit. I'm really good friends with Billy Tierney, and Billy and I started at Hopkins together way back when, and we've been friends ever since. So I know Dylan. Both Dylan and Joe, I was on the phone with today for hours. I was on the phone with Coach T yesterday for an hour and change, and I'm going to reach out to Dan Shamati and talk to him a little bit. And you know, you know, what I said to Joe today was, you know, I don't really need, and I don't mean this arrogantly, I don't really need to know, like, certain things. What I want to know, if you had a magic wand and did it all over again, tell me the parts that you would not do, right? I don't want to know what you would do. I want to know what you don't do. And so those were the conversations. And I talked to Dylan a ton. And I talked to Joe a ton. We've become really good friends as well. I mean, I adore those guys. I mean, what they've done and how hard they work and the programs they're building, it's just spectacular. So, yes, to answer your question, yes, and I will continue to do that, as well as talk to, you know, veteran coaches about, you know, certain hurdles and so on. So, yeah, the many people that I can speak with and can teach me, I'm all for it.
Now, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves on this, but speaking of Coach Sheridan, when we had him on, we talked about how his approach to scheduling was a little bit different than most other teams in terms of in teams starting out by loading up on quite a lot of big opponents, more so than a lot of other new programs. I know we're still a couple years away from this coming out, but are you looking to go a little bit more on that traditional route where you're easing into it, a couple, you know, big games here and there? Or are you trying to... Are you looking to approach it as, you know, let's go in, have a challenge right off the bat, and it'll make us better, kind of like how Sheridan has been wanting to do at Cleveland State? Now, obviously, you know, you also have to have agreements with other schools and everything, so obviously there's that caveat. But, you know, what is generally, what are you thinking as of now for your scheduling game plan?
Yeah, Ryan, I mean, we're going right after it. I mean, with the staff that I have, I mean, those guys are so competitive and you know, I'm a very competitive person, and you know, you learn by jumping in, and you know, and if Duke and Carolina and Maryland, all those guys are willing to play us, and Ohio State, holy cow, and we're doing it. I mean, and yeah, will we take our lumps? Sure, you know, but I think we'll have the proper perspective about that, and we'll also know that the growth process will be accelerated for us, because that's what's going to happen. You know, you have to grow up, right? And the only way you're going to grow up is you gotta, you know, the old saying, just throw them off the pier and see if they swim. If they don't, we'll go in there and save them later, right? And that's how we're going to approach this if guys are going to be willing to play us, and so yeah. And if not, then we'll play whoever will be willing to play us, right? So you have to have a two-pronged approach. I was talking to Dylan about that today. Yeah, I'd like to line up all the ACC schools, but that's not realistic. They're not going to do that. And if that isn't the case, or the Big Ten, it's Hopkins and the Big, yeah, they're in, yes, the Big Ten.
See, that's the Big Ten propaganda master.
Yeah.
Anytime you're ready, I got a whole binders of to talk.
It's just so weird to say that. But the reality is that's going to happen. But then, so then we'll play whoever, you know, the Air Force and Cleveland State and Detroit Mercy and Bell, whatever comes up. So, but ideally it would be, let's just go into it.
Coach, I got to ask, since we're talking about potential games, potential conferences for Utah to join. Have you, I'm sure you guys already have discussed it, anything you'd like to share or anything like that about, like, what's going into your thinking about which place is best home for Utah, or if independent is the best route for you guys, at least for the first couple years?
Yeah, it's really up in the air at this point. I mean, I'm just starting to dig my heels in. You know, a lot of those talks, really, some people say, well, you probably already lined it up. Well, a lot of those talks, they just couldn't occur, because nobody wants to spend a whole lot of time worrying about whether we're going to play in what league when we're not even in a league, you know. So now that this thing's official, the phone has really been starting to heat up. So, answer your guys' question, I have no idea. That's the reality of it, all right? What I do know is that the University of Utah and our lacrosse program, we want to compete at the highest levels. So, you know, wherever that's going to take us, that's where we're starting. We're going to start to try to compete at the highest levels. If they will allow us in, awesome. If they don't, then I got to continue to work my way, I don't want to say down the ladder, but looking at different conferences. So I'm going to do, and the school is going to do everything it can to align itself with the best lacrosse schools in the country. But, you know, you know, who knows? I don't know. But, you know, we're a Pac-12 school, and we're a big school, and we have big football, and we have big basketball, and we have big aspirations. And hopefully somebody will allow us to – I'm getting a light show back here. But hopefully somebody will allow us to – I think the flicker's coming to tell me to shut up.
By the way. I mean, you guys come with your own network, so I mean, any conference would be lucky to have you, honestly.
So we'll see. Hopefully they'll allow us in, and if not, we'll just keep working, man. Yeah. It's not going to kill us.
I mean, the ACC, you know, we have a spot open for you guys, you know, for that AQ, because, you know, we need that, especially from a coming from a Q's manager. But
wants to play with the best, though, Chris. So.
But that's ACC.
The rest of this podcast could be these two convincing you to join me to the ACC, your Big Ten.
But he does have experience with both. So, Coach, you've been definitely a part of the NCAA with at Hopkins playing, and then recently as a volunteer assistant in North Carolina winning the championship, and then last year getting your feet wet in the MCLA. What have been your key differences that you've realized between the MCLA and the NCAA?
Really good question, Chris. Obviously, you know, the talent level. You know, from you know, all the way across the top. I mean, there's many layers between, you know, North Carolina, Maryland, you know, Syracuse, blah blah blah, and Utah, and you know, and Utah State or whatever. So it's clearly the talent. The pace of the game is you know, the guys, you know, the kids were. You know, I would just, God, we got to play faster. And Mark would lean over and say, Dad, you know, they're playing about as fast as they can, right? So that part. But that being said, okay, competing is competing, right? So when the face-off occurred, those teams, they competed just as hard or as diligent as it was if Maryland was playing North Carolina. I mean, it's this, you know, competing's competing, right? They're competing at their highest levels. We were trying to compete at our highest levels. So that part was really cool. And then I really have to give a lot of props, and it doesn't get enough credit. And later on down the road, when I do have some time, I really want to try to get some people to focus on this whole MCLA thing. It is extremely well organized, especially in the conference that we play in, the RMLC. They take a tremendous amount of pride in the product they put on the field. Colorado, BYU, holy cow, Colorado State. So that's something. And the coaches, they don't get enough credit. I mean, these guys all have jobs. They're not getting paid any money. And they have their teams fairly well coached up. Especially the West Coast teams, you know, California, Ned Webster and the Chapman guys and Grand Canyon. I mean, they do a phenomenal job. So they deserve a lot of credit, and it provides a tremendous resource for young kids that you know, hey, not everybody wants to go be a D1 lacrosse player, right? And it's a beautiful game. And I say this in our camps all the time, but I don't think the young men know what it takes to be a D1 lacrosse player. It's hard work. It is a total life commitment. So you can still love the game, go to a great school, Cal, and play a high level of lacrosse and have a whole lot of fun doing it. So, you know, the layers are you know, there's 3, 4, 5 layers in talent across the board. You know, there's layers in talent and coaching, and no disrespect to any of the guys I coach against this year. But at the end of the day, it's a really viable product, and I thank the good Lord that I did it, and we're going to do it again.
I know we touched a little bit about this earlier, about, you know, growing the game and everything, but, you know, we're talking about something of, you know, building onto something, and in addition to the University of Utah, obviously, the whole mantra of grow the game and everything. You know, we're talking about a decade out and everything, but where do you see lacrosse in that, you know, Salt Lake City area, maybe Ogden and Provo as well, with you guys at the forefront of everything? Do you really see it, you know, really starting to take off now? It's at the varsity level. Now you guys are helping to aid in the growth of the game in Utah. Do you really see it like you guys being, again, to say a term I used earlier, that powder keg that really help set things go in motion?
I certainly hope so. We're not the saviors. You know, there's been a lot of people out here that have done an inordinate amount of work. You know, Fish Bartlett with Tribal West and Charlie Friedman and the youth organizations and Marty Westcott and Renee Tribe. I mean, they built this thing from the ground up. So, you know, I don't want us to be the ones taking, you know, sort of what I hope we do is just help them accelerate what they've already done. And I think we will do that. I think we've done it already. You know, like I said about formulating the youth leagues under one umbrella, people are teaching lacrosse so many different ways, and I'm not saying we have the answers for sure. We don't, but I do know that there is some structure to it that's missing in the lacrosse world today, from the youth development all the way up. So we're going to try to provide some of that, and then ultimately, I think what's going to be cool is, you know, when we do go play in front of a packed stadium, and Denver comes and visits, and Carolina comes and visits, and these young kids, because that's, you know, I go back to the days of playing at Hopkins, or you know, my sons will tell you, going down to Hopkins on a Saturday and sitting in those stands and saying, wow, I want to be like one of those guys, right? Going to the Dome and watching Mikey Powell play. I want to be like, that's what I think is really cool. And we're going to be able to bring that to the youth here, and they can stand on the sideline and watch some of the greatest players in the world play and say, gosh, and then spur them on even further. So I think it's really a great situation we're in right now. And what I love about it is that everybody at this point in time, we're young in the marriage yet, is on the same page pretty much about it's for the kids. It's about for the development. It's about growing the game, and it's about doing it, trying to do it the right way, the best way that we know how, that's focused on the kids and developing skills and having fun. All right. Just have some fun at the youth level. I go to some of these games. I was back in Baltimore watching my young nephew, my niece's son play a 10-year-old game in Baltimore, a club game. And the people were miserable. The kids weren't having any fun. The parents are yelling. Everybody's screaming. And that's not the way it should be, right? I mean, yeah. We've got to take some of that pressure off. And, you know, and maybe we can do a little of that out here. I don't know. And maybe not. Maybe I'm dreaming. Maybe it's a pipe dream. I don't know. We'll find out. Mm-hmm.
Coach, if I was an AD at another school, what factors at my school would what have you learned helping Utah become a program? Like, should an AD like look for like the obstacles that maybe people on the outside don't notice? I was wondering, like, I know everyone's in a jovial mood right now, but maybe what was like one of the most difficult things about this year, or just about starting a program, that you found, just to give everyone both the uplifting point of view and like a realistic view of the difficulties of that you faced getting to this point?
Yeah, good question. I think the problem we have, if we're all just going to sit around and wait for a bunch of ADs to say I want to add lacrosse, then it ain't happening. Extremely proactive. You know, where we had a leg up, and again, I don't want to, is we had a group of guys, myself included, and Adam and Mark and Will, that were willing to take a really big risk. And they happen to be pretty well-known players. I mean, I got three MLL captains out of 9 teams on my staff, right? And all three of those guys are phenomenal human beings, number one, but players in their own right. You guys watch a lot of lacrosse, and those three guys are pretty dang good, right? Yeah. And then you had, you know, me that had a lot of experience in all facets. So I think we were very fortunate to put this group together. And I don't think you need something like this as powerful, but you're going to need something pretty forceful. And I think some people back east, you know, if they want to look at a different view and get a different taste of the country and really help the game grow, they're going to have to get out of their comfort zones and maybe take some chances and expand their wings a little bit. But if I'm going to go into an AD, what you got to do is you got to mitigate their financial risk. That's number one, because it's bottom line, bottom line, bottom line, right? So you're not going to go in there and say, hey, let's start men's lacrosse, and by the way, we're going to drop $1.5 million a year, and so be it. It just isn't going to work. Now, they have sports that they're already running that are losing that kind of money, but they can't get rid of them, right? They can, but they won't, all right? It's a very touchy world they live in, all right? It's not reality, okay? Yep. So they have sports that are dropping $1 million a year, and they don't get 10 people to come watch them run around a track or whatever they do, right? So you got to convince them that there's a mitigated risk on the financial side. Then you got to show them that, hey, look, you know, we're going to put a product on the field that's going to bring 3,000-4,000 people to a game, 2,500, 3,000, 4,000. We're going to sell tickets. We're going to raise some revenue that way. We're going to get some sponsorships, and we're going to get out in the community, and we're going to build support. And this is what we did. And then you're going to show them that we're going to bring in kids here, 10 to 15 kids a year. 80% of them are going to be from out of state. All these in-state institutions want kids from out of state. They don't know how to get them. All right. When I told this committee, we had 40 kids coming here already in the 17 and 18 classes, all right, from 16 different states. They were flabbergasted. And the average GPA was a 3.4 and the average SAT was a 26. All right. They can't do that on their own. They can't do it on their own. And these kids are all full pay. I'm not giving them any money right now. So I think you got to show them that. And then you got to show them that the lacrosse world really respects. And they graduate, right? We're the second highest graduating sport in the NCAA right now. Yep. And they go on and do pretty well. Financially, the alums are very giving to their school, all right? So you're building this whole network that you otherwise wouldn't have. And then you got to show them, all right, that ESPN and the Final Four, there's 25, 30,000 people showing up, should be more. And we got to figure out how to fix that. No other sport, what other sport's getting that? Another sport. I watch baseball, right? The thing, the Omaha, which I think lacrosse should take a little page out of their process and get us to a designated spot every year where people can plan their world around and move it back a little bit off the Memorial Day thing, because that is becoming an issue. But that's it. Nothing else gets 25, 30, 35,000 people at their game. So, and again, and then you can compete for a championship. Right now, the landscape's changing. I said this today. I mean, Ohio State and Towson and Loyola has won one. I think there's going to be a lot more teams knocking on the door. And every athletic department wants to win a dang championship, right? Every athletic. Well, lacrosse is as good a shot as you're going to get, I think, in the future to win one. So I think if you can approach them that way. But the number one thing, is you got to mitigate their financial risk. And if they, once you say that, then you know, their eyebrows pop up a little bit. Okay, let's talk. So,
Coach, looking at one of my fellow Cuse guys, Paul Carcaterra, when he tweeted out.
I'm boring Chris to death over there.
It's 8:30 over here. It's so past my bedtime. But I'm looking at
God, that's right.
Go to bed, Chris.
21-year-old has an early bedtime. But I'm looking at Paul Carcaterra, fellow Cuse guy that I know really well. He tweeted out when the announcement was made, I go to Utah a few times of the year for the last couple decades. If I'm a blue chip recruit, I'm seriously thinking of going to Utah. And then he listed a few reasons, the Wasatch Mountains. I don't know if I pronounced that right.
Yeah, you got it.
Wasatch, fantastic. Blaze my own trail. If I'm good enough, I'll put program on the map and then grow the game. So he gave his own little, you know, marketing sketch on why to go to Utah. For you as a head coach now, getting these guys to go to a Division I program in a little bit, what's going to be your marketing little pitch to kids out east, and especially since you're the westernmost team in Division I, the guys on the West Coast, like California and Oregon and even Colorado and Utah?
Yeah. Very similar. We'll start with academically. I mean, I was so happy when I got here. I met with the academic people, and our index is really rising. I mean, we compete against Stanford. It's a Pac-12 school, California. Obviously, we're not getting the same kids as Stanford, but we have to be in that realm. So I want the academic index to be as high as I can, because I see us competing against Virginia's and Notre Dame's and Syracuse's and Carolina's and Ohio State's, Michigan's. That's how I feel about this opportunity. So that's number one. There's a lot of really cool opportunities to get a really great education here. So that's it. And then you know, all the other factors, right? You know, you get a chance to be on the ground floor of something really, really special. You know, that doesn't come along once in a while. You know, my pitch to the kids back east is, man, get out of your bubble. Right. You guys all live in a little world that, you know, and I can tell you, I lived in it for a long time, that once you get out of it, there's so much more out there, you know, so get out of that, you know, experience a lifestyle that's a little bit different, have an opportunity maybe to play a little bit earlier, than you would at any of these other schools, because, you know, there's good and bad with what we're doing. We're going to have to play a lot of young kids. That's the bad part. And the good part is we're going to have to play a lot of young kids, right? Sell them on that. And then the opportunity to really blaze, you know, we're trailblazing here, right? Lewis and Clark, you know, you learn a lot by going off and exploring. So we're going to be trailblazers. And then the last piece, and some would say this is the first, but I don't think recruiting is about coaches. You know, I think you make a mistake there if you're going to a school because you like the coaches. I think it helps, sure. But God forbid something happen, coaches change, leave all the time, or you get hurt, right? You got to be at a place you love. I think one thing I can tell you, Chris, there hasn't been a kid that I've had on campus yet that has turned us down. That I know. And I think when you come out here and you experience the lifestyle and you meet our staff and you take a look around this school, we can give you a whole lot to think about taking back to the East Coast, a whole lot. And that's all I want is a fair shot. And I think we're going to get that from kids back that way. So I think all those things added in with, you know, being able to play offense with, you know, Marcus Holman and Will Manny, that's not bad, you know, and being able to be caught defensively by Adam Gittleman, because they're great coaches, guys. Trust me, they wouldn't be here if they weren't. They're awesome human beings and they're great coaches. So, you know, I think our pitch is going to be pretty easy, you know, and if I can get anybody to just take that shot to get on that plane and come on out here, and heck, man, from the East Coast, it's 4 hours, right? The tailwind's blowing home. You get home in like 3.5, right? Coming out, you got to go against the wind a little bit. It's like 4 hours. So, you know, what the heck? How long does it take you to drive, you know, from upstate New York to Chapel Hill?
Oh, boy, yeah.
Oh, my. We fly. Greater than 400 miles rule.
You know, so from Baltimore, if kids are going to Chapel Hill from Baltimore, it takes them 6.5 hours to drive now. I mean, going down 95. So I'm quicker. Southwest, and you're out here in four.
You get the freaking flyer miles, too.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So, there's my pitch.
Any other lacrosse-related questions before we get into some of the more fun, lighthearted ones?
I got a couple, one of the little two-fire quickies. Rolling shot clock, and then you're rolling the dive, because that's been a big one. Big couple of things.
And instant replay. Let's put all three of those.
I will tell you this, and you can ask my son Marcus this. I've always been a fan of the dive. I played goalie. I played when the dive was – there wasn't a dive. It was just part of the game. I think they can tweak it a little bit from you know, how you take off or whatever. I just think it's an exciting part of the game, and I think we restrict the athlete making a really, you know, play. I think if the guy just starts to run and just takes off and jumps, I think it's got to be part of the game. So somehow they can come up with – a way to call it that's feasible, but I think it should be part of the game. And I love the MLL. And we want to try to play fast out here. We'll see. I don't know. So I'm all for shot clock. So the dive should be brought back in. I think you can tweak it to where injury risk is mitigated from a ruling perspective. And I think the shot clock is a necessity.
We tried to, have a little fun here, so we're just wondering if you could let us know, the food scene in Salt Lake. I know Salt Lake's actually quite a large mid-major city, so I'm sure there's a lot of good stuff around there, and I've never been to Utah. I don't know if Chris or Ryan has, so we don't really know.
Look, I have three guys that have never been to Utah, so we're going to have to make a date one day, boys. You're going to... visit the Utah staff and get a good feel for Western living. So, yeah, the food scene's awesome. We got this sushi blues place that plays blues music and on a Tuesday night, I think it is, Sydney. It's really cheap and it's got a good vibe to it. There's a great Italian restaurant right down the street from my house, Tucci's. I'm a big Italian restaurant guy, Italian food guy. My grandmother was full-blooded Italian, and it's probably some of the best food I've ever eaten in my life. And then, obviously, you've got Park City, 30 minutes up, where all the rich and famous and lifestyle is beautiful up there. Awesome restaurants there. But Salt Lake's a cool city. It really is. It really it's got a lot going on. And we're just kind of getting ingratiated into it now. And obviously, you know, the whole Mexican piece, and the Red Iguana, I think, is a big place here. But so yeah, it's pretty cool.
Utah is like routinely picked as like the happiest state in the union. Like as an East Coast guy, have you understood why that's so? I mean, like you seem to. I mean, you're obviously doing great and you look great. But I just didn't know if like what it seems like everybody like loves Utah. Like especially these surveys and stuff. I mean. We're not trying to tell recruits to go there, but we're objective journalists. But
here's what I learned. There's a saying out here: people come to ski for the winter, but they stay for the summers. So I'll give you an example. Being East Coast guys, right? You know, living in Baltimore and Chapel Hill, you can't get more humid, hot places in the summertime. Literally every day out here is 85 to 90 some odd degrees. There's a thunderstorm coming in here. That happens like twice a summer, two times, and there's no humidity. So you wake up in the morning, you're staring at the Wasatch Mountains. There's mountain ranges everywhere. You can walk, go up for a 2 mile hike up into the most, and not hate it because it's not humid and it's sunny from now until November, to be quite honest with you. So the lifestyle, I think, fits people's personalities and there's so much to do. I told you we went down to Zion's, one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's 4 hours away. You know, Park City skiing is the greatest skiing in the country at Snowbird's, 30 minutes away. You know, some of the greatest trails to hike and walk on are all over the city. And then it has sports. It's, you know, it has the Jazz, and it seems to be a very, very, You know, it's like Denver. A lot of people just like to get out and about, very athletic. A lot of people riding bikes and stuff. So I think that's part of it, you know.
What's something that most people might not know about Utah that's an interesting little quirk?
Honestly, the one thing that's kind of like, it's not upsetting, but it has an incredible homeless population in Salt Lake. It's exceptionally large, and it's just, you know, from the outside looking in, it doesn't fit. You know, it's a really fit city and it's a really vibrant city. It's, you know, it's one of the best business cities in the whole country right now. State's one of the top two or three businesses, and it just has an incredible homeless population. And I think what I've learned, and I'm trying to find out why, is that the Mormon Church and the Catholic Church have a big influence on trying to take care of that population, and it seems to be a place where they come to. So that, you know, it's just it disturbs me. I feel so bad for the, it just seems that that's becoming so prevalent in our society, and I don't think there's an answer to it. So I think that's kind of unique. Other than that, I don't know.
That's something like going to just a quick, fire off of on that point. Are you looking at fixing that problem or helping the ease that problem over at Utah, or have you even done that in that year since?
I would like to know more about it, you know. But you know, again, I'm not qualified. You know, whatever I can do to help, I will certainly do it. And that's we're really trying to ingratiate ourselves into the community here. It's just, I don't know. You just feel bad, and you kind of wonder how it happened, and where does it go from here? So it just, you know, stirs a lot of thoughts in my head and questions. And so yeah, you know, maybe one day I'll be smart enough or brave enough to try to help.
Going off a little bit, throughout the show, you've been talking about your family and how close they and they how you it means everything to you and everything. So I guess on the fun end, what's your favorite part of juggling the title of being a lacrosse dad with your lacrosse coaching duties? Obviously, your three kids all play the D1 at UNC. So how's it feel like on one hand being the lacrosse dad, getting to see your kids do great in lacrosse and everything, and at the same token, you know, balancing that with coaching?
That's a cool question. And it's funny because I had a lot of people call me when Marcus was playing, guys that were coaching their own sons at different levels. And, you know, and I ended up kind of having like therapy sessions with a lot of these guys, because it's not an easy thing to do, and it's very difficult. And I advise a lot of people to probably not do it. But it just, you know, I think what you have to do, and what I was blessed to be able to do, is remove myself from the coaching part of it and just really thank the good Lord that I could be there every day and watch and practice and be around, you know. And so that part of it was cool. And then have the opportunity to walk over and watch my daughter practice if I wanted to, which I didn't do a lot of. And, you know, I think Lori and I have kept it all in perspective. You know, at the end of the day, this was all about them and their choices. And, you know, to be a Division I lacrosse player was their motivation. It wasn't ours. And we just agreed to have fun with it and enjoy it and not let it consume us. I think the best part for me was, you know, hey, I'm the boss on the field and I'm the boss at home. So, shit. You know, it's good both ways for me, but just kidding. Anyhow, so we just looked at it, honestly, as just a blessing. And I think our kids would tell you the same thing. And, you know, I know my boys, one of the things that they always said was that, you know, Dad, you didn't treat us any different than you did the other 40-some guys on the team. And I look at all those guys as sort of my sons in some way. So I think the same lessons I was trying to pass on to Matt and Mark, I was trying to pass on to Joe Sankey and Greg McBride and Sean Delaney and Billy Bitter. And, you know, so.
Coach, I just was wondering a little bit of the lacrosse, like just the reception you've gotten from the student population. Well, I know Utah has had a club team for a little while, but with the excitement, has you seen that reception from the school increase throughout the season, I guess? Or
Yeah, very much. We, you know, we sold over 1,000 season tickets between our team and our community. Excuse me. My daughter wants something from me. Yeah.
All right. She's like, get off this podcast. These guys are boring.
So it's like
the beauty of life.
All right. Now. So she says, anyhow. So yeah, it's going to take some time. I think the community is much more receptive than the kids are right now. But Utah has an incredible supportive. Like they have this mighty Utah student section that comes to their football games called the MUS. And guys, you got to check it out. Like when you watch a Utah football game, there's about 5,000 kids that sit in the corner of the stadium, and they are off the charts. I mean, standing up the whole time, and they never miss a game. So I think we can capture some of that as we start to become more ingratiated into the community. But, you know, they were supportive, and they supported our players who were fellow students. And so it's been positive for sure. Not where we want it to be, but definitely positive.
Any other quick things you want to ask or anything to wrap up or anything? Safe, any
I was giving him a Philly question. How was inadvertently, we didn't realize that we were going to cross paths again, but, you know, your championship run with North Carolina and Philadelphia, could you just let us know about, like, you know, how that felt for you and for, you know, just the team? I can remember seeing you on the sidelines with Chris. Chris was taking some footage, but, you know, I didn't think we'd be talking on a podcast like 2 years later. So I just didn't know if your impressions of the cities, I'm sure being from Baltimore, you've been in Philadelphia before, obviously. Or...
Yeah, I, you know, that event was just otherworldly. I mean, you know, us getting there was such a relief. And I think, you know, you guys know, I mean, there's, over the years in Carolina, there's so much talk about us being underachievers. You know, and to be quite honest with you, it bothered me, but it doesn't bother me because at the end of the day, you don't know what goes into all this and you can't let that stuff get to you. But the fact that when we got there, there was really a great sense of relief and safe. I didn't go anywhere outside of my hotel in the stadium in Philadelphia, so I can't tell you a whole lot about Philly.
Don't worry about it.
I just kid Ryan Creighton all the time that, you know, I wouldn't want to be in there, but anyhow. So he and Sankey are the Philly guys. But but it was just otherworldly. And the other thing that was really, really cool is that our men's team and our women's team stayed in the same hotel, which was by mistake. They didn't set it up that way. So you know, both teams winning the national championships, you know, both teams just celebrating and both teams being together. And my daughter was on, and my wife at that time worked for Jenny, the director of operations. So there was just all these really cool vibes going on. And when the girls left to go to their national championship game, Joe had our whole team in the lobby lining up and just cheering them as they got on their bus. And then when we left to go, Jenny had the whole team there cheering us on. And the girls came to our game after they won a national championship. And then the 91 team there, I think you guys are familiar with that story a little bit with the 20 years. And
Go ahead.
Yeah, so there was just so many things. And you know, and just winning it for you know, you guys know the story about Joe and Mike. Also, there was a lot of neat things, but what gets lost there sometimes is the leadership that occurred in that senior class with Jake Mathai and Patrick Kelly and Steve Pontrello. Those guys grew up, man, and they, if you would ask me 8 years ago, what class would have been the class to take us to that promised land? It probably wouldn't have been that class. But they went through a lot of difficulty. You know, they graduated, I think it was only seven guys in that class. Yeah, and again, I thought sometimes it gets lost in all the great stories, but that senior class was off the charts, man, off the charts. And so they deserve so much credit, if not as much credit as anybody else in that whole event. So, you know, all the pieces came together. We were playing some great lacrosse, if you guys watched us down the stretch. I mean, I don't care. Anybody could have run out there, and we would have, I think we would have. And that game, you know, how cool was that game? It was one of the craziest things that I've ever been a part of. So all things, it was magical, and it'll be something we'll never, ever forget.
All right. Well, I think that just about wraps up in case, say, for Chris, last call.
No, Coach, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much gracious. For joining us. It's been awesome having you on, and best of luck to you guys down the road. We're really looking forward to seeing the University of Utah Utes on the field, scheduled for 2019. But whenever you're on the D1 men's lacrosse field, we are really looking forward to seeing you guys on it. And best of luck to you guys as you grow the program.
Yep, Coach, it's an honor. I mean, we had Dylan Sheridan on at the beginning of this past season, at the end of last season. So it's always great to get the first ever coaches on, and it's a little bit special for. It's been a new tradition for us to do that, but it's a very special for, you know, to promote your program and help spread the word about your program and even the game of lacrosse in general.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It's like I told you, I have a lot of respect for what you guys do and how much fun you have, which I think is important, right? Can't lose sight of that. And, you know, hopefully I'll be a part of what you guys have going forward. And anytime you need to call or talk, I don't like the Skype thing too much, but it's been pretty cool. I've learned how to manipulate it around a little. It's been fun, and I enjoy telling the story because I think it's important, and I like to have fun. So I appreciate it, and good luck with everything.
All right, thanks so much, Coach.
Go Utes!
We thank Coach Holman for joining us along. That was a great conversation with him. Chris and Safe are still with me, though, because there are other coaching news with new programs to talk about, specifically St. Bonaventure.
It's hot this offseason, just like last year.
Yep.
But, just shout out to Coach Holman. That's awesome. I was a little surprised by this, right? I think I couldn't imagine Mearns was the guy. You know, he just seemed like he was Mr. Kinesis. He's just had such a long history there. And then St. Bonaventure with a nice scoop, you know? I mean, like, this is a coach that knows the area really well, obviously. He's lived, like, close to 30 years of his life there. And he's got ties with a conference that, to me at least, makes the most sense for St. Bonaventure, you know, in the MAC. So I think in one fell swoop, St. Bonaventure got, you know, two for one, the coach for them and maybe the guy that gets them into a conference that, you know, like I said, again, to me, makes the most sense for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I think, you know,
Ryan, you know Western New York, is that even accurate or what?
Yes. St. Bonaventure's Western New York. Yeah, I think that's perfect getting Coach Mearns there, because what better way to build up your program in Western New York than having a Western New York guy who coached at a Western New York school? Obviously, this is going to be fun to watch going forward with the Canisius St. Bonaventure rivalry. It's already pretty hot in other sports. But, you know, I think if you have a guy that knows the lay of the land, that works out perfectly for building a program. Obviously, you know, St. Bonaventure's you know, not going to maybe do as quick of a build as some of other programs, you know, just given that, you know, there's a little bit more limitations than a Michigan or a Utah. But, you know, if you're going to have a guy that knows the area hop right on board, that's only going to help your program grow a lot quicker, you know, especially given that Western New York, it's a lot of talent, you know, more in the northern areas of Western New York. St. Bonaventure is a little bit closer to Jamestown, but, you know, there's still the Buffalo suburbs, there's still the Rochester suburbs to recruit out of. And the other advantage that Coach Mearns has, too, is he was also head coach of the Canadian national team, so you're building inroads to the Niagara area as well, just north of the border, or technically west of the border. So that definitely benefits, because when you're in Western New York, you have the benefit of recruiting upstate New York. Obviously, you have the challenge with Central New York right next to you, but you got Buffalo suburbs and Rochester suburbs there. But you also have the advantage of being able to recruit in the greater Niagara area up in Ontario, which is a hotbed for lacrosse in itself as well, especially with box lacrosse players, which can give you – we've seen box lacrosse guys be the big difference for some of these teams' offenses. So that's definitely a smart move for the Bonnies, and now that opens up Canisius, of course – for an opening, but I think the Bonnies definitely a very smart move for their first head coach going with Randy Mearns.
And Ryan, you mentioned box lacrosse. I mean, Mearns played with the Buffalo Bandits and the Rochester Nighthawks, so he's got plenty of box experience. He knows that area. It's even helped that both those teams are in Western New York, so he's a Western New York kind of man. That's a very good move. When I first heard of, I was thinking about who could it could be with just the basic parameters. I'm like, this could be a big move, and I mean, it's not the big move that I first thought it would be, but it's a pretty darn good move for the program of that size and where it's at and where they could be ending up for a conference in a little bit. And by the way, we will have him on for an interview shortly or later on in the summer, probably even the month. But with Canisius, I mean, Brendan
Murphy, if you have a new program, call us at College Cross.
Yeah, it's becoming a rite of passage. Cleveland State, Utah, it's looking like St. Bonaventure. It's a rite of passage.
Call me LaSalle, call me VCU, George Washington,
Boston Oregon. College.
Any Oregon. 8-10 Pitt. Teams that should have a lacrosse team by now. Give us a call.
So with Canisius, they have Brendan Murphy, I believe, as their interim head coach until they find a new head coach. But, you know, one guy that comes into mind that I've seen, and this is speculation, not like an actual report that I've heard, but this is speculation, just throwing a name out there. Joel Rodenstruck, the head coach at John Carroll, he just finished up his first year there. He actually helped John Carroll win their first ever Division III tournament game, and then they lost to a really tough team, and I think they lost to RIT. They got crushed by RIT in the first or second round in the D3 tournament this year. But Rodenstruck was a former assistant head coach at Canisius from the fall of 2013 to 2014 till 2016 before he went to John Carroll, and he also played there. So he could be a possibility. He could come back. I don't know why he would come back to be at the same position he once was, but he might be fine at John Carroll. Who knows? But he might be a possible name. But other than that, you know, we still have currently right now two open vacancies in the college lacrosse role.
Now we've always said like being in a hotbed is good and bad. You know, it's good because it's good to be in the hotbed, but bad because everybody like is trying to take your talent. And New York is no stranger to that. There's how many programs in New York, Ryan? Like 10?
Lots.
Am I close to that? It's close to double digits.
Yeah, let me just do a quick count. 2 Long Island, 3 New York City, Marist. You got 4 in the Central New York area with Hobart, Cornell, Syracuse, Colgate. That's 9, Albany, Siena, 11,
Binghamton,
12, and Canisius, 13, St. Bonaventure, 14. I might be missing one or two. 14 by my count.
But nearly a quarter of the teams are in New York. But St. Bonaventure is quite blessed. I mean, I didn't realize 3 hours away from Buffalo. 3 hours away.
It's an hour away from Buffalo.
Sorry, 3 hours away from Toronto. Sorry, 3 hours from Toronto, 3 hours from Cleveland, 3 hours from Pittsburgh, real close to Buffalo, and Philly's only 5 hours away. So that's actually a little bit of a nice sweet spot, like a little bit more west than Binghamton, so they actually get a little bit closer to some of that Midwestern talent. Hey, you know, I've kind of felt like if you're it's no real better time to get a lacrosse team running if you're a small school than right now. You have only 12.6 scholarships, so it's not like, you know, you have to pay 45 kids full tuition. As Coach Ullman says, you know, it's about the bottom line. Like, nearly half, if not all, of your team is going to be paying near full tuition, you know, just given the stand, you know, the kind of kids. And, hey, if you're a kid and going D3 and going to, like, Williams, maybe you go to D1 and go to St. Bonaventure, you know, and they can start scooping up talent. So this, like I said, maybe they get kind of get, like, that Monmouth, BU, Marquette kind of thing going, you know, like a young new program that can do pretty well. It's a really nice area, you know, and like I said, for them to get Marnes, and that's big, you know what I mean? Like, that's not your own conference, but you guys were mentioning before that, you know, they actually have some, you know, games against each other and just being in that area. So that's a big scoop.
Mm-hmm. By the way, hour and a half to Buffalo from St. Bonaventure. Myself, but okay. Yep. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Canisius-St. Bonaventure rivalry could be fun because, you know, when coaches move on from one program to another, it's not really out of any ill will, and you still have that, you know, bond and connection. We see it all the time with, like, for instance, Bill Tierney. Even though he left Princeton, he's still very supportive of them and scrimmages them even when he's at Denver. So it's not going to be like a bad blood type of situation like you see in other college sports, as we kind of alluded to earlier with Coach Holman. Of, you know, that the lacrosse community being so tight-knit. So I think, you know, with this move of Mearns going from one to the other, it's going to help foster a nice, healthy rivalry between Canisius and St. Bonaventure going forward, I think. You know, I think you'll see them scheduling right off the bat, given that it'll be a homecoming for him and everything like that. So, you know, that's going to be fun to watch both teams develop. I think they're going to feed off of each other. You know, St. Bonaventure is going to grow as a program, feeding off of, you know, Canisius as a competitor, but at the same time, Canisius is going to, you know, continue to improve themselves, knowing that they've got a rival an hour and a half down the road as a regional competitor. It's going to drive both teams, I think, to, you know, want to be better.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And then the other opening is, of course, Michigan, and we have a pretty big scoop on that. Chris will do it because he has legwork, but
Did you guys hear anything about it?
Yeah, so multiple sources, as we reported earlier in the morning and afternoon. It will be Kevin Connery, from what we've heard. It will be him. We don't know how long Michigan will wait until they announce it, but the former Maryland associate head coach and defensive coordinator, from what we've been hearing, will be Michigan's second head coach in program history.
A lot of whispers, so not just one.
A lot of whispers. So usually, let me tell you this all right now, because a lot of people are maybe not really taking this seriously, but we're not really known to break news, but we've heard plenty of whispers from a lot of our sources, and to me personally, I felt comfortable, and I talked with a lot of our guys on the staff, and they said go with it, and we decided, you know what, let's just go with it. So we feel comfortable, and it will be Kevin Connery with our reports that we've heard. And you know what? If it somehow turns out to be wrong last minute, which I don't think it will, I'll eat crow. That's fine with me. But right now, I've been hearing from solid people that it'll be Kevin Connery. And that's a surprising hire to me from what we've heard originally. And not a lot of people have thought Kevin Connery, but I think it's a really good hire, because looking at his bio today, he played at Hopkins. He coached at Penn State. He also coached at Maryland for the past 4 years, and now he will go to Big Ten school number 4, Michigan. He only has Ohio State and, I believe, Rutgers left to check off the Big Ten list before he retires, and he'll be a Big Ten master for life, just like Aaron Ashman in the Atlantic Division a few years ago, making all those appearances in all those teams. But, you know, great hire, defensive-minded. We've heard some whispers about other defensive-minded coaches. Joe Amplo was rumored to be interviewed for Michigan as well. We've even heard some speculation about Jerry Byrne being in there, Sean Nadelin especially being thrown in there. when this hire opened, and these all seem to be defensive-minded coaches. Connery's a defensive coordinator. He's one of the top defensive coordinators in the country. A lot of people don't really think of him, to be quite honest, in my mind. When they think of defensive-minded coaches, they think of maybe Byrne. They might think of Nadalin, too, but Kevin Connery's up there definitely is one of the top defensive coaches, and it was on display championship weekend with Tim Mueller. He was named the most outstanding player, the first time a defenseman was ever named the most outstanding player in the NCAA tournament, which is a surprise for me. But it's a great hire for Michigan, and they had their new facility opening up in 2018, and Connery, who we're reporting right now will be the head coach, will have that at his disposal, and the big name in Michigan as well.
We never divulge our sources ever, but we heard something on the weekend. Chris then verified on his own, and everything that's come in afterwards seems to have bolstered our original post. So I think this is a good call for Michigan, and I think it was a good call to post this up also. This is a guy who has plenty of Connery's like one of the most recognized names in like Maryland, you know, for lacrosse, you know, besides like the big head coaches themselves. So I think this is a really good call for Michigan. He kind of reminds me like of a younger Nadalin or younger Myers over at Ohio State. But it'll be a great call. It'll be a great call for the site once this becomes official. But yeah, no, I feel good when we actually had this posted. So yeah, we have a little fun with our tweets, but like this, we thought this merited its own post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Michigan does indeed hire Connery, very solid move. I know a lot of when we were talking about coordinators, we were kind of thinking about Jerry Byrne at Notre Dame, but you definitely can't go wrong with Connery. I mean, his defense at Maryland has been outstanding, especially in the early years of Tillman. But I mean, even still today, even though Maryland's gotten a little bit more offensive minded, I mean, Dylan Mueller winning most outstanding player of the NCAA tournament as a defenseman's a pretty good sign that, you know, your defense is still rock solid. Between him, IDA, the list goes on and on. So definitely a good move. You know, it's also a good against the grain move. A lot of, you know, programs are going into the offensive direction. So why not go against the grain and, you know, throw curveball? You look at the Big Ten, and the Big Ten has a lot of high-scoring teams. When you look at Maryland, you look at Penn State, especially with Tambroni, that's all on offense. Ohio State's a little bit of more bruise them up, but they can still score a bit. And, I mean, Hopkins is now kind of way more offensive-oriented than defensive-oriented compared to their past. So it's good to go maybe, and of course Rutgers. Rutgers offense next year should be nothing but firepower. So why not counter all the offensive-minded teams in the Big Ten by going in a defensive direction? So not a shabby hire for Michigan, I think. You know, they could have made a bigger splash, but this might be the right fit for them, more so maybe than some of the bigger names.
Connery was definitely an assistant we discussed. Like, he was probably third, I think, after Byrne and Matt Brown, of guys that we thought, you know, they probably go after the legends, and then they go after like the top head coaches, and then if they can't get that, maybe they'll go for one of the top assistants. This is what makes the most sense. This is what happens in college football, right? Like, whoever is the defensive coordinator for Nick Saban is going to get attention. You know what I mean? Just because Alabama's just running it, whether they win it or not, they're in the
conference. The train wreck that's going to be Kiffy Cakes at Florida Atlantic this fall.
Oh, for sure. But, like, you know what I'm telling you? Like, that's just what you do. You see somebody who's getting it done, and you try to get, like, one of their top lieutenants. Connery's been with the Maryland team that's been to 5 out of the last 6 Final Fours, 3 straight national title games, pretty much should have won it last year, did win it this year more convincingly. Like, you can't go, right? You know what I mean? Like, if Michigan, like, couldn't get the Nadalin or an Ample or even how far those discussions even went, a lot of that's just speculation. But,
to then land like the top assistant at the top program in the country. Maryland is the top program in the country, bar none. I think that's a great move for Michigan.
Again, once we have confirmation, we will definitely post that out. And as Chris alluded to, if we're wrong, we will own up to it. So no worries on that end, too. We're not afraid to make mistakes. But as Chris said, we're pretty confident, very confident on this coming true. So
we will people were asked for comment. That's how professional we took this. So.
But otherwise, yeah, as we said earlier, too, be on the lookout. We're going to try and set up an interview very soon with St. Bonaventure to have Coach Mearns on board. That should be a fun one as well. And the summer of content just keeps on clicking here. Next week, we'll have a regular episode as well because we miss our contributors.
Adam, Jake, what's up? I hear you out there.
Marissa,
all our new listeners over in Utah, thanks for coming and listening to us. Shout out Coach Holman. Absolutely loved the conversation. It was one of the best we've had. So really looking forward to all the great things from Utah.
Yep, and as usual, you can follow us online on Twitter. I'm at RyanMcD29.
I'm at CF Jastrzemski for all your memes and occasional breaking news.
I am at Erie_Barrister, and for the first time ever, Chris, you guys didn't fix that on your show, right? And by the way, excellent podcast on Pro Lacrosse. Everyone wants to know how to make Pro Lacrosse better. Listen to the podcast before this one. But for the first time ever, our new handle for our podcast, we're just at @college_cross. If you know at college cross, ask him nicely if you could move over. But we love the handle. Part of our rebranding, I guess you could say.
Yeah, there's a new header picture too by yours.
I was literally just about to go to the fantastic to have Art Ryan back. It's absolutely
it's beautiful.
That's gorgeous. That was just like, it was amazing. It was like the ultimate like scout badge sash. It was great. I think it was awesome. But
I like them all.
Yeah, no, it really was. It's just like, no, this has been fantastic. And then, Chris, you're going to Omaha soon, right?
It'll be Monday, yeah. Holy crap. Yeah, Monday I'll be going to Omaha. And I'll be there until Wednesday. Doing some stuff with pizza, as I mentioned. It's interviewed Paul Rabel and their Pizza at All-American Jason Zone Fisher at Foxborough on Championship Monday. And Pizza decided to have me back for some reason. Thank him for that. For the College World Series, so it'll be fun to see all the sport representatives and Paul again and Jason again down at Omaha.
Sounds good. We look forward to seeing that.
You gotta get Sheetz or Pizza Hut to sponsor this pod. One of the two. I think we're close. Those? I think we're gonna have
that. You'll never be able to talk about Wawa ever again then. Also,
deal. Deal.
Instagram, college_cross as well. Facebook, we're there. CollegeCross.com for all your news, analysis, all that good stuff. iTunes and Google Play for your podcast subscription.
Leave us a good review.
Otherwise,
it's all cleaner. The new handle is all cleaner. They're all the same now. It's fantastic.
So otherwise, thanks so much for listening to this special. Thanks again to Coach Holman and the University of Utah program. So grateful for them to hop on board. Otherwise,
We love you, Markel Fultz.
Trust the process.
Trust the process.
So be on the lookout for our St. Bonaventure special or our next episode coming up. It's the summer of content here on College Crosscast.
Take care, everybody.
Bye, Felicia.
And stay hydrated because it's hot. It's the summer, you know. Longest day of the year today, summer solstice.